The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Welcome in to our Thursday edition of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. And happy to have you on board today as we move a little closer to the big game on Saturday at West Virginia. I'm looking forward to this trip because it's someplace new. I've never worked a game in Morgantown. Should be certainly an energetic atmosphere. I was on the on a show last night up in West Virginia with the play-by-play voice for the Mountaineers, and you could certainly sense that there's a lot of excitement there in Morgantown about Kentucky coming in. I imagine it'll be similar to when Kentucky went out to Creighton several years ago. It's one of those places where the fan base knows they may never see this team in that building again, and I would imagine will be hard to get tickets if you're a Kentucky fan. A lot of times blue finds a way in. I don't suspect there'll be much blue that will find a way in up in Morgantown on Saturday. We'll get into that deeper tomorrow, although we will discuss it with Mike Pratt, joins the program a little bit later on. Jay Billis as well will talk about the Kentucky-West Virginia matchup. He'll join us here in just a bit. And Justin Rowland from Cats Illustrated. That's our guest lineup presented each day on the show by Sleep Outfitters. You can interact with us via Twitter @LeachReport, email LeachReport@gmail.com, or you can call 877-904-1080 toll-free anywhere in Kentucky. How about South Carolina last night? Goes into Gainesville and beats the Gators 77-72. South Carolina's on a nice little run. They won at Georgia, beat Kentucky, lost a close one to Tennessee, and now win at Florida. So it was a four-game stretch where if you're a Gamecock fan, you probably figure your best-case scenario was going to be to win the two home games, and instead they win two on the road plus beat Kentucky at home, and they get a 3-1 stretch out of there, which I would think puts the Gamecocks in position to play themselves back into the NCAA tournament. They're playing awfully well right now. And just the second conference loss for Florida. Auburn gets a nice win on the road at Missouri, 91-73, and it's going to be a tough place for Kentucky to get a win. Missouri could be too, but I think they've only lost only lost once at home going into that one last night, but Auburn winning. Kentucky still got road trips to Missouri, Texas A&M, Auburn, Arkansas, and Florida and in the conference. So obviously no sure things at any of those places. If you want to have a shot to be at the top of the league, I think you have to win two of those five. That would be four road wins overall. If you only have the one home loss, that would put you 13-5 for the league and have a shot at tying for the league title. And it's really all about being able to be in a position to get a decent seed somewhere. You would hope top five at worst. Ideally, if you could win more than two of those road games, maybe you could work your way up to a three seed, I don't know, for Selection Sunday. A couple of other notes. Tyler Hero, future Wildcat, chosen for the Nike Hoops Summit game. Hopefully Tyler will still find his way into the McDonald's game if somebody drops out. He, I think, should have been in there already. ESPN's Dan Dockett yesterday reporting that his sources tell him Louisville has lost its appeal and will lose its banner for the 2013 national championship and will have to pay $15 million in fines. So just a report at this point. We'll see if it turns out to be true. But he's there in Indianapolis where the headquarters are. So one would think that potential for that one to be true would be a little higher than normal. UK women against Alabama tonight. That'll be at the Coliseum. And on Saturday, the UK alumni chapter here in Fayette County is going to host a watch party at Kroger Field at the Woodford Reserve Club for Kentucky, West Virginia. Links to the stories that we talk about each day can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. We're heading to a break. When we come back, Jay Billis joins the program from ESPN. It's the Leach Report Radio Network, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
Find out more about the voice of the Cats and get great coverage of the Big Blue at TomLeachKY.com.
Welcome back into the show for this Thursday. Jay Billis from ESPN on the line with us. He'll be there in Morgantown with the game day crew this weekend. And you obviously saw Kentucky last weekend. You've seen West Virginia. Give me an early thought on the matchup and what will decide it for either team.
Well, I mean, really, the it's going to be determined by how Kentucky handles pressure and how they take care of the ball and whether they're able to attack the pressure or they're going to turn their back and sort of wilt from it. That's not just true of Kentucky. It's true of any team that goes in there. You can get hit pretty hard by that pressure, and it can be relentless. I don't think that West Virginia presses as much as they used to, but they're still pretty difficult to play against, and they've got a big-time shot blocker. Sagaba Kanate can throw back a lot of shots brought to the rim. And it's an older team. It's not a great offensive team, but rebounding and defense are their calling cards. And the fact that they're older and physically more mature, it would be an extraordinary win for Kentucky to come out of there with a W.
Coaches use a phrase playing against a team like West Virginia, be strong with the ball. This will be especially true for a young team like Kentucky, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Oftentimes you can tell a team, you know how it is, Tom, you can tell a team what it's going to be like and try to prepare them, but there's no real preparation for what you're going to face. It's like somebody telling you, well, this is how difficult a marathon's going to be. You don't know until you go through it. And so, the strong with the ball thing, I mean, it's one thing, you know, when you're in high school or some of the teams that Kentucky's played so far where, you know, you've got to be really, really strong. And same thing for a running back, I'm sure. I mean, I never played football at any decent level, but, you know, you're carrying the ball in high school, and in college they start punching it out of there. They're not trying to tackle you. They're trying to punch the ball out from your grasp. Same type of deal. And West Virginia probably gets, I mean, I don't know if get away with is the right thing, but they probably have fewer fouls called on them than they commit because they play that style all the time. And I do think the referees get used to seeing it, and they can't call everything. So it's especially difficult to play against them because you're not going to get a call you think you should get. If you're going to sit there and cry about it, they're going to take the ball away from you.
Cal was saying after the game on Tuesday night that for his team to have any kind of success in March, they will have to learn how to play good man-to-man defense. And he thought they took a step forward in that area against Florida, maybe a step back against Mississippi State. How much better can individuals get within the course of a season defensively? And then can a team defense get better even if individuals don't get a whole lot different?
You can get a lot better. I don't know the answer to it. You know, I think defense is probably like the old adage about a chain. You know, your defense is probably only as good as the weakest defender you put on the floor because most teams are going to pick on weak defenders. And you can have a defensive possession where, you know, four guys do everything exactly perfectly and one guy makes a mistake and you're going to get scored on. You know, that's the way it goes. But, you know, I think Kentucky can get a lot better defensively. You know, I think the biggest issue is I think a lot of people don't think about how the game's connected. So, you know, your offense can really help your defense. So if you run really good offense and you make the other team take it out of the net, your defense is automatically going to be better because you're not going to give up as much in transition. You know, you can't defend the turnover. You know, it's going to cause a run out that your defense isn't going to be able to deal with. And so, you know, you can sit and be a really good defensive team. You turn the ball over, that's going to give easy baskets to your opponent, and then your good defense doesn't get a chance to play. And you can establish a really good offensive rhythm through your defense by scoring off your defense. So sometimes when things aren't going well and you're going, wait a minute, you know, Kentucky doesn't shoot as well. You know, it's funny how their offense gets better when they guard and they force some turnovers. They can throw the ball ahead after a rebound. And then and get some baskets that way. So can things get better? Yeah, it can get a lot better. But it's not just sort of the idea of we've got to get better defensively. they've got to get better in all areas that are connected, so that that they have a rhythm, and you can establish a really good offensive rhythm through your defense. That happens all the time.
I think I saw a comment from you somewhere fairly recently that Kentucky's first shot defense is maybe not as bad as it might look on paper, but they give up too many second shots. Their defensive rebounding rate's really poor. Can a guy like Jared Vanderbilt help a lot in that area?
He can, but Vanderbilt's not in shape right now. He gets really tired quickly, and so he's fighting that, and he's not really able to think about ways he can be effective, because he doesn't have as much gas in the tank as he would if they were playing all the time. And that's not his fault. It's just that's part of being hurt, and it's going to take a while for him to get back into game shape. And he's never really been in college game shape, and because he's never played a college game. His first college game was, what, a week ago? So, I could see how winded he got against Florida. And it wasn't, it's not just a thing about, hey, get on the bike or get in the pool or all that stuff. You have to play at a high level to be in basketball shape, because it's how it is. It's really physical. It's not just the wind you need. You're running carrying a heavy object all the time, which is your opponent. It's not an easy thing to do. But he can help a lot in a lot of different areas, because he's a good passer. He throws it ahead. He can get a rebound. He can take it on his own and start a break. But while Jared Vanderbilt can really help, he's not going to be the difference. Like, he can't take the team on his back and all of a sudden he's going to be, the best player. I just don't see that happening.
What's the toughest matchup the West Virginia presents for Kentucky?
Yeah, I don't think it's a matchup thing, because I don't think that West Virginia is a great offensive team. So it's not like Kentucky's going to have to worry about them scoring a bunch of points. The thing Kentucky's going to have to worry about is is Kentucky going to be able to function under stress? Because it's going to be 40 minutes of stress. And ultimately what West Virginia winds up doing is wearing teams down, so where in the second half they're mentally and physically fatigued. And West Virginia makes it really difficult just to inbound the ball. So and inbounding it after a timeout, inbounding it after a made field goal, inbounding it after a free throw, things like that, that you take for granted. And so all of a sudden now, the things that are normally no-brainer easy things that you never have to think about are really hard. And that wears teams out a lot. So this is not, I hate to say this, but this game is very little about X's and O's. It's more about, sort of operating calmly in the middle of a fire drill. That's basically what it is.
Cal always talks with his teams about finding the best way for each one of them to play from season to season as he reinvents his team each year. Do you have a handle for what that might look like once they start to click?
I mean, for me, I think Cal's talked a lot about toughness and a lot about, having fun. That was a big part of what he was talking about last week was they need to have fun. But I used to have a baseball coach that said having fun is doing hard things well. And I think some of the players, and I'm not with them every day, but I think some of the players sort of tend to look at their success as being tied to, am I making my shot? Did I score? And am I doing that kind of stuff? Instead of, kind of like I said before about, defense, a player can establish a great rhythm as a player through things other than scoring, through defense and rebounding and, getting the loose ball, things like that. Like, the things that help your team win aside from scoring, and it's amazing how scoring takes care of itself when you're concentrating on those other things. I think one of the guys that has done that has been Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I think he sort of established himself as a defensive player first, and his offense took off as a result of it. I think that's really the key. And so I don't know what the team is going to look like. I know if guys are playing, not thinking about their own games, but thinking about our game, they wind up being better, having more individual success. It's funny how that works, but it's always been that way in basketball.
Jay, I appreciate the time. We'll see you this weekend.
Always a pleasure. See you, Tom.
Thanks, sir. Jay Billis, ESPN, always great insights. And he and Coach Greenberg, Jay Williams, Reese Davis, they'll be in Morgantown for College Game Day. So a second straight appearance for the Wildcats on that show this weekend. Obviously, it'll be focused more on the West Virginia side. Coming up next is Justin Rowland from Cats Illustrated. Mike Pratt a little bit later on. The Leach Report guest lineup each day presented by Sleep Outfitters, Kentucky's number one Tempur-Pedic retailer. Largest ever mattress sale underway now at Sleep Outfitters. Take advantage of some fantastic deals. My wife and I got one of the adjustable-based Tempur-Pedic units a couple of years ago and love that. Also, they have these new Tempur-Pedic cloud pillows. Got one about a month ago, and if you want to try something that might change how you're sleeping, give it a try. Good night's sleep makes you so much more productive, healthier, you feel better, helps with every aspect of your life, and you can get a sleep assessment for free right now at Sleep Outfitters. Go to sleepoutfitters.com to find the store nearest you. Justin Rowland from Cats Illustrated. When we come right back, it's the Leach Report Radio Network, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
Can't get to a radio? You can listen to us live on the web at talkradio1080.com. Now, back to the show.
Justin Rowland with us from CatsIllustrated.com. We'll start with a little basketball, Justin. What was your take on Kentucky's bounce-back performance on Tuesday night?
For most of the game, I thought Mississippi State looked like the team that wanted it more. And then, you know, kind of contrary to what we've seen in some other games, Kentucky just brought a different energy level and confidence. And, you know, big picture, if Knox and Washington and Gilgeous Alexander play at that level and they clean things up, then I think the forecast for this team changes.
How important is Jared Vanderbilt in that forecast?
Yeah, I think very important. Calipari noted 7 rebounds in 11 minutes and so impressed with the energy with which he gets off the floor. But, you know, he's just got to get more acclimated to the offense and a little bit more polished when he's around the rim, because he's going to have a lot of scoring opportunities and has to start to convert more of those, and Calipari talked about that.
Justin Rowland's with us from CatsIllustrated.com. We're coming up on the bottom of the hour, so we'll continue the discussion here in just a bit. Get into a little football recruiting as well. A signing day is at hand. Just around the corner for Mark Stoops and company, although most of the hay is in the barn with the new early signing period. It's the Leach Report Radio Network. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. We'll be right back.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Tweet us at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com.
Twenty-six away from the top of the hour. Justin Rowland with us from CatsIllustrated.com here on the Leach Report. Kentucky goes to West Virginia on Saturday. Is this a kind of free money game? In other words, they're not expected to win by pundits, and so the closer they get to winning, the more credit they get in terms of their national perception?
I think it could be. They still need a marquee win, so there's a potential for a lot, you know, of benefit if they win, but it's free money makes sense. It's a little bit like the Kansas game when they went to Lawrence a couple of years ago, and they actually played a lot better than I think a lot of people anticipated, but this team has struggled a little bit more. I will say West Virginia played really poorly against TCU, and they jack up a lot of three-pointers, and the way Kentucky defends the three, that's kind of an opening for maybe them to fare better than I think a lot of people think they will.
Yeah, that's a good point, because if you're a West Virginia fan, you would want to see your team, you know, really attack the rim with the, you know, strength that they have, older players, and not kind of fall into the trap of shooting too many threes.
And Bob Huggins called out a few of his players after their loss to TCU for not moving the ball and for settling for some bad jump shots. So if Kentucky can defend the dribble like they did against Florida and not like they did against Mississippi State, as Calipari said, and force some of those outside shots, that's probably their best chance of coming out with a win.
Justin, let's shift gears to a little football. A couple of recruiting commitments that Kentucky has picked up. Lee Allen Daly, wide receiver, offensive lineman, Nick Lewis. Give me your take on those two guys.
Lee Allen Daly is kind of a possession receiver who prides himself on blocking, really physical guy, and was one of the top available receivers from the Deep South. And so, you know, Louisville had offered him when he was a high school freshman. He was going to officially visit Tennessee, and receiver was a big need for them. So that was a nice get. And then Nick Lewis had been committed to Washington State. I'm told he measured 6'10" at Kentucky. Ooh. And about 350 pounds, 87, 88-inch wingspan. Just kind of a funny story. He told me that when he committed to Washington State, Vince Martha said, "That's okay, you're still going to be a Wildcat." And he laughed about it at the time, but now he's laughing because he says he turned out to be right. So that's something about Vince Moore as a recruiter, kind of relentless.
Yeah, he's very good at his job. I would imagine he gets more than a few calls trying to steal him away. He's very, you know, it's a very long-standing relationship with Mark Stoops that helps Kentucky hang on to him.
Yeah, every year it seems like some Big Ten schools are obviously enamored because of the work that he's done in Ohio. But I will say, the more he goes out of Ohio and gets guys from Florida like Nick Lewis or from Maryland like Josh Pascal and Nasir Watkins or even junior college ranks like Lonnie Johnson and Terry Wilson, the more he's going to become attractive to schools outside of the Big Ten. But I think he's happy at Kentucky, and he knows that they need him very badly.
Where does Kentucky go with its remaining scholarships that it has available before signing day?
Well, they're working to keep Xavier Peters on board. I think he's going to visit Florida State coming up here in the next little while. Morrow was watching Leonard Taylor, defensive lineman Leonard Taylor's basketball game the other night at Springfield, Ohio. They're bringing in running back Kavosie Smoke for an official visit this weekend. And those are some of the main guys. You know, they got 23 commitments. They're going to need two or three more, depending on what Peters does. And I think they're just at the point where they're going to take best available. They do need another running back, but they have the luxury of taking the best available player.
Still think they'll hang on to Peters?
I'm less confident of that than I ever have been before. And I will say, I think he's still got a little bit of work to do academically. He's got to finish strong. His transcript, I haven't seen it, but I've heard he's still got to finish strong academically, and that's a variable that maybe we haven't accounted for, but it is going to come into play here down the stretch run.
What about the other linebacker, Oates, from up in Ohio?
Yeah, he's a big guy for them. The question was, is Ohio State going to make him a take? And I've heard Ohio State's leaning towards taking him, but he's been kind of turned off by schools that have been hot and cold. He was turned off by Oklahoma being kind of hot and cold, and Ohio State hasn't really thrown both feet into the ring, and I think Kentucky's probably going to end up with Oates because of that.
Hey, what's your take on the hiring of the new wide receivers coach from Arkansas, Michael Smith?
I think it's a slam dunk hire. I think it's the best hires they've made since Grant and Henshaw. He was Arkansas's best recruiter over the past few years. Going back to 2012, he was one of the top 10 recruiters in the Big 12 at Kansas State. He was at Kansas State for 12 years. And if you're under Bill Snyder for 12 years, you know a little something about coaching. And he's been a fantastic recruiter in Louisiana and Texas and down in that part of the country. I think he can be the kind of recruiter that Morrow and Grant have been in their respective areas.
Justin Rowland, thank you much.
Thanks.
And you can read him at catsillustrated.com, at Roland Rivals on Twitter. He joins us on Thursdays, presented by Shuffle Bean Coffee. When we come back, Mike Pratt. It's the Leach Report Radio Network, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at Tom Leach KY.
On this sunny Thursday, Mike Pratt joins the program presented by Boone's Butcher Shop in Bardstown. Check them out at boonesbutchershop.com. And how about the Gamecocks going in to win in Gainesville last night?
Man, was that, I guess the Gators had the Wildcat hangover after being
maybe so
in Lexington, huh? I mean, that was a stunner of a game. I caught the last, 5-10 minutes. And,
same here.
Man.
Yeah, they stood strong down the stretch. I thought they would, South Carolina would succumb there in the final 2 or 3 minutes, and they've had a nice little run now. I mean, included in there in the Kentucky win, but they won at Georgia, they beat Kentucky, lost at home to Tennessee, and now beat Florida. So that's an impressive 3 out of 4 stretch.
Yeah, they got themselves to, what, 4-4 in the league? So
4-4, 13-7 overall. So, you know, they've still got a good bit of meat on the bone to play themselves into the tournament, but they're certainly headed in the right direction. They had Texas Tech, and they get them in Columbia on Saturday, so that's a big opportunity.
That would be that might be a deal-breaker because they've gained some ground with who they're beating, and particularly Florida on the road is a huge come selection week. This Texas Tech game, buddy, that could be their, assuming they don't hold down the stretch, but that could be their signature W. Sure could.
It's been a you know, it's obviously a much better league this year, but the teams are beating up on each other a lot, so you wonder, the RPI numbers, all those things are so good for the league that you would think they'll get a good number of teams in. I'm not sure if the seeds will be that great because they keep beating up on each other.
Yeah, but, you know, we've always heard that about other leagues and how, you know, they beat up on each other and blah, blah, blah. They end up with some decent seeds and a lot of teams, and I think that's where the SEC's heading, and that's all good. That is good for the league and good for future recruiting, future scheduling. So, I think it's I'm really surprised because he's getting a lot out of some real marginal people, okay? You got to give Martin a lot of credit. He's getting a lot out of those kids. Whether they can maintain it or not, that's another thing.
Let's talk about Kentucky and the win over Mississippi State. After the game, a couple of things Cal talked about, and I'll get your take on. Jared Vanderbilt first. He said he's going to meet with Jared, may have already done this by now, to talk about trying to find the best way to use him offensively. He has a very versatile skill set. And you know, but not a great shooter. So, how do you think he'll fit best as they sort through this?
I don't know because I don't think. First of all, he's 100% game ready. Okay,
true.
I don't think his conditioning is where it needs to be for this point in the season. So, I think that limits, and that's a byproduct of not playing. Right? It's nothing against the kid or coaches. It's just a byproduct of not playing. So once he gets that, and that should happen soon, get his game legs, his game conditioning, and I think Kentucky's got a chance to go small at times, Tom, and he's a pretty damn good rebounder, okay? So you got a chance to go small with him in the game and still not get hurt badly or at all on the glass. So, Paul Pressey, you and I talked about this, played at VCU, junior college guy when I was at Charlotte. We looked at him, and they had him at VCU. He was a Richmond kid. He became the point forward. Don Nelson, Big Don, of the Lakers, of the Celtics in coaching, decided he coined the term point forward. That was Paul Pressey. Shot very poorly from the outside. But his game was, man, he could get it out and go and then transition. And he was about 6'6", 6'7". And he kind of coined that term. And I can see Cal using him a lot like Paul Pressey was used. He was a dangerous weapon, man. He could go places off the bounce. And he was strong. Wasn't as tall as Jared or built like, but he was strong with the ball. And he made a lot of things happen. So Cal can move him around. I think you might see him in the middle against zones, you know, flashing to the charity stripe area because he's such a good passer. He can catch, turn, and make a commitment. You might see him on the wing or at the point with the ball.
He got 7 rebounds in 11 minutes the other night. You know, I've talked about this before. Julius Randle doesn't get enough credit for how good a rebounder he was. Vanderbilt, to me, is the first guy I've seen since Julius that really goes after missed shots the way Julius did. Do you see that?
Yeah, I think the term we might want to use and look at is relentless.
Yeah.
Nerlens had that about him, too. Relentless rebounder. And Julius did have it. And if this team had Julius Randle just for that one thing, just that one item, it would be a totally different team. And this young fellow, Vanderbilt, could easily be something like that. I don't think he's he hasn't shown foot injury whatnot that he had the hops that Julius had. But you never know. I'm waiting for him to feel comfortable out there because he's in game shape. We'll see how that develops.
Yeah, and that will take some amount of time because, you know, with a foot injury, he wasn't able to do a lot in terms of conditioning. I mean, you can, you know, get on the treadmill and those things or on a bike, but it's nothing like game shape.
No, and I saw him one time he got a rebound. He started to go back up. He was trying to push off that left leg, and it just didn't happen, okay? And it didn't happen to the degree he thought it was going to happen because you could tell by his body. I mean, he got up, but I think he expected just to go back up strong and quick, and it just didn't happen.
Talking with Mike Pratt. You can follow him on Twitter at MikePratt22, 10 away from the top of the hour. We'll take a break. Come back with one more segment on this Thursday edition of Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Report served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington, Palomar Center, and in Hamburg. Open 7 days a week, locally owned and operated, and they will do catering for your business meeting or if you're getting folks together to watch a game on a Saturday afternoon. Let Wild Eggs handle the food, and everybody will be thrilled. They've got a gluten-free menu, too. Everything's made from scratch at Wild Eggs, so call one of the two Lexington locations, and they will hook you up. Mike Pratt's with us, talking about Kentucky, West Virginia. Before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about inbounds plays. It's been a hot button issue for some fans. Kentucky didn't get what it wanted, or certainly didn't get the call it needed on the end of the Florida game. We'll start with out of bounds plays for the opposition, and too many times teams are scoring off those. You and I watch shoot-arounds, and a lot of the things that teams, when they score on, it's something they've worked on in practice. So clearly there's a breakdown in terms of carrying that over that's still happening. And is it communication?
Well, they certainly go over it. We've seen the couches. The coaches, Tony Barbie, it might be Joel, it might be Kenny, that give the scouting report at a given time. Cal, they've talked about it. They've shown, and guys just – they go brain dead at times, you know. I mean, I don't know how to explain it other than that, Tom, because we've watched it be presented. That's a sign of guys' inexperience. They've got to learn, grow up, and pay attention. It's unfortunate.
On inbounds plays offensively, I would assume with when you have a team that is as young as this one is with all the freshmen, and you've got a guy like Vanderbilt, now you're working into the mix, and you've had players in and out of the lineup with injury and other things, that you have a limited amount of practice time, and you've got a lot you're still trying to cover. You're still trying to get better man-to-man defense. You're teaching more zone than you've taught before. So something gives, and so you don't maybe work as much on a variety of specific inbounds plays. You just say, let's just get the ball inbounded and get into our offense. Is that what happens?
Yeah, that's what happens. And another thing, you know, Cal's always used that he'll put a shooter to inbounds the ball, and he'll throw the ball to a big guy who might be midway between the charity stripe and the short corner, and they'll catch it, and then the guy coming out of bounds will come around and get the ball and look for a shot. Then they'll bring somebody from the other side for a jump shot at the other elbow. And, you know, when the shooting's struggling, like it is now, that kind of takes that particular play out. You know, you don't have Devin Booker back there. You don't have Tyler Ulis and Murray, and we can go on and on. So I think we'll probably see Cal work on some different things in that regard, trying to score the inbounds play maybe. Those inbounds plays, if guys pay attention, if your opponent pays attention to their scouting report, okay, or you pay attention to your scouting report about the other team, the inbounds plays, you shouldn't get those baskets. You should obviously force them to inbounds it out and then start their offense. But our guys have kind of broken down there, let's be honest. It's been a breakdown, and that's one of the things I'm sure Cal talks about, wanting to clean things up, Tom. I'm sure that's at the top of his list, right?
Absolutely. Now, West Virginia on Saturday. This is a place I'm guessing you didn't play there, but you've done games there. It's going to be a wild atmosphere with Kentucky going in there for the first time since the 71 season, and they know, their fans know, they're not going to see Kentucky in their building maybe again for a long, long time. So not going to be many Kentucky fans in there. What's Kentucky have to do to hang around until they have a chance to win it at the end?
Going to have to take care of the ball, partner. Going to have to take care of the ball, because that's West Virginia. They're going to generate their offense either from your turnovers, somewhere from the inbounds play to maybe the hash marks. They want to turn you over there. They're going to trap you, try to use midcourt. So you're going to have to handle the ball. The other thing, you're going to have to guard, you know, Hugs is an inside-out guy, and he's going to post his guys. He's going to pound it in there, try to get you in foul trouble. And you're going to have to defend the inside. So we might see Kentucky play a little more zone. I don't know. But you are going to have to defend, because Hugs is all about intimidation, power, strength. And, you know, we've played them, what, in the NCAA 2 years in the last five or six, whatever it is. We have been able, with our taller guards, to throw over the top of their shorter guards against their press and attack the basket on the backside. I think you'll remember that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not so sure we're far enough along in our development to do that this year. But we'll see. And it all starts with taking care of the ball. If you you're not going to beat West Virginia.
Yeah, it can get ugly quick if they get to start to feed on those turnovers.
Yes, sir, buddy. If the crowd gets into it, they're getting multiple shots. They get excited. You've got to call timeout. The fans continue to get excited. I mean, it's just like a snowball, man, when you're at their place. That place, if you've never been there, the place is just amazingly loud when the fans get into it.
And it's not like Huggins needed anything to help get his guys focused, but now with a loss on Monday night, and he's got a whole week to prepare for this game, one would think would be laser focused in on what their game plan is.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is a big game. It's a platform game, the SEC Big 12 Challenge. So these guys, you know, our guys, their guys, they all understand where they're playing and the people that are watching and fans and friends back home. I mean, they're going to be tuned in. It's an opportunity for them to make a statement, and Kentucky to make a statement to the selection committee, right?
Absolutely. And this ought to be a game. P.J. Washington comes off a big game. This ought to be his kind of game.
It should. It should be his game. It'll be interesting what kind of whistles we get over there. And, if they want to call things tight when West Virginia plays, you know, they could blow whistle every time down the floor. But if they let both teams play, we're going to have an interesting game, I think. And, yes, indeed, it will be PJ's game. I think it plays into Nick's, too. He's a strong guy. He can jump. And Vanderbilt, you know, this might just be a game for him that is tailor-made for a breakout game.
We'll see. Mike Pratt, see you on the plane tomorrow. And we'll see you guys tomorrow. Mike DeCourcy and West Virginia. It's Tony Cerriti, Radio Voice, among our guests tomorrow on the Leach Report.
Email it to leachreport@gmail.com. See you next time, right here on the Leach Report.